Welcome to Cultivate the Ordinary Podcast, curious conversations for the anxious, frustrated, and bored. I'm Travis.
And I'm Jesse. So often we're held captive by screens, schedules, and media that's mind-numbing and polarizing. This leaves us seeing dimly through a fog. We want to spark more imagination and a better awareness of God's presence in the everyday.
Join us on a fun journey of discovery and curiosity as we look at the ordinary through the lenses of joy, wonder, beauty, and hope. Before we get into today's podcast, where we will more conversationally introduce our guest and good friend, Steve Smith, and let him tell us more about himself, I wanted to say a few more opening words about his bio. Steve has pastored churches in North Carolina and the Netherlands. And then later on, Steve with his wife Gwen founded Potter's Inn, which was a nonprofit ministry for leaders in ministry in the marketplace to gain resources, training, and immersive experiences in soul care. Later, founded the Soul Care Institute, which allows for immersive retreats and then a curriculum-based program for soul care transformation. Steve has also authored numerous books on the topic of soul care and related things within spiritual formation. Definitely some amazing books to check out and other curriculum, which we will share as links in the show notes. So Steve is drawing on a wealth of experiences and insights to take us into the world of soul care, describe what it means to care for our souls, and then take us into why we all need to lean into the space personally and through our faith communities. Welcome to the podcast today. We are really excited and just overjoyed to be with our good friend, Steve Smith, actually at his house in Brevard. And Jess and I are sitting here as we interview him, looking at their beautiful mountain view. And it's just filling me with hope and inspiration on this day. So yeah, really, thanks for having us here, Steve.
You're welcome. I'm glad to have you. Good to be with both of you.
Good to be with you. I think I just saw a white squirrel.
Oh yeah. So if you don't know the city of Brevard, North Carolina, it's known for its white squirrel population.
So, well, we're also known for the Pisgah National Forest.
That's true.
There's many things we're known for, and now I'm a resident. But we're surrounded. We're in a little mountain town, about 7,000 people, 45 minutes from Asheville, cocooned by the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Pisgah National Forest. So it's a wonderful place to live.
Breathtaking. It is breathtaking. And every time we've been to Brevard, to me, it has a little bit of feel of Durango, Colorado. I mean, maybe that's a bad comparison, but just, you know, not quite the spectacular Rockies, but it is just peaceful.
It's good to have you here in my home.
Mm-hmm. Well, and last thing I'll say before I introduce you a bit more of some of your background and what you bring vocationally and other things experientially into this podcast. Steve has a podcast called Potter's Inn Soul Care Conversations.
That's right.
Which is an amazing podcast that's been around for how many years?
Well, we have 12 seasons of podcasts, 154 episodes.
Wow. And then listeners all over the world. Jess and I have been really enlightened and inspired by the podcast. And so to get to interview Steve on our little homegrown, homemade podcast feels like I'm parked next to a Ferrari with my VW bar.
Well, I am no Ferrari. I'm a rusted out Jeep.
Well, this Jeep has been on some adventures, so we're going to hear some of that. So getting right into this, you know, Steve, and he'll expound a little bit on this, but Steve comes from the pastor world, you know, going back to pastoring churches, and then his journey led him into the soul care world, and then starting a nonprofit, the Potter's Inn, and the Soul Care Institute, which maybe he'll talk about a bit later. But, and he did that with his wife, Gwen, and they've had retreats through the years and really, really been a huge voice in the landscape for soul care, especially for evangelicals that, you know, a lot of this sounds so different and foreign and kind of making it the language of, for even Baptists. So Steve, if you want to add anything more about, just briefly about your background, your family, anything else you'd like to say.
Yeah. Well, I was born in the church and there really hasn't ever been a time in my life that I knew life without the church. So the good, the bad, the ugly of all that that brings and the story. And then when I was in college, I had a really dramatic encounter with Jesus on the college campus of where I was going to university. And even though I was raised in the church, I think it's fair to say I knew the church, but I didn't know Jesus. And I think, sadly, that's how many people today who share the culture of the church, talk church, do church, go to church, act like church. But I think for many people, there is this growing existential question of the intimacy of the God who made all this world, and what is my relationship with that God? And so that's been my journey. And so we exited the church after kind of hitting the wall and after working in the mega church in Durham, North Carolina, one of the largest Baptist churches. In fact, now it is the largest Baptist church in the state of North Carolina, the Summit. But when I was there, it was the foreshadowing of all that. We were already a large church, four worship services. Gwen and I had four small boys. It was church, 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 funerals, weddings, preaching four times on Sunday when I was your age, Jess and Travis. And so we just didn't know what we were doing. As I look back on it now, I think we were intoxicated by my vocational pursuits, my search for my identity, where do I belong? But I just remember having huge questions in my heart, like, do I really fit? And so it was in 1996 that I was introduced to a man named Dallas Willard, who was leading a retreat for 12 broken, messed up, imploded pastors out at a Catholic retreat center in Sierra Nevada near Los Angeles. And I had just a moment of clarity, a moment of, oh, so this is what it's all about. I had been to college, I'd been to seminary, I'd worked on my doctorate, but I had never really made the connection that I had a soul, and my soul was very, very sick. And in order for me to live the life that Jesus described as an abundant life, I needed to get healthy. And I think all of our listeners can identify that there's probably some unhealth in all of us. There's so much knowledge now to help people understand this. But in my, as I was coming along, it was like duty. It was like obedience. It was like deny yourself. And there's nothing wrong with any of that, because all of that is important. But the missing element was when Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, I did not know what in the heck that looked like or acted like or looked like to love myself. Because in my sickness and my soul sickness, I was raised in a family where love was assumed. You just assumed you were love. I don't have a recollection in my dad or with my mom of being told. It's just like, you're loved, you're a Smith, and let's do the right thing and make the right choices. But come to find out, after a lot of psychology that I've studied, a lot of authors that I've read, and a lot of counseling that I have done along with Gwen, every soul needs to be told that they are the beloved of God. And I have been on that journey, and I've never left that journey. I think it's the most important journey, especially in this politically divided, racially charged, climate-changing world that we're living in, wherever you are on that spectrum, is that we can't get to second base or third base or fourth base, and we definitely can't score home runs until we get to first base. And the first base of all soul care is understanding that I am loved, that God's delight is on me. And here we sit in the beautiful mountains of the Blue Ridge and it, wherever you're listening from us. But there's just a verse in Ephesians that Paul says, before the mountains of the world were formed, I had you in mind. I had settled on you as the focus of my love. That's kind of like, pull the car over, stop a minute, and think about that. That
yeah.
Wherever you are, if you're on the beach or if you're in a boat listening or you're in a car, that the focus of God's love is not on geography and definitely not on a building called made by brick and mortar called the church. Mm. Yeah. That we, each of us individually, are the focus of his love. Mm. And so that was really my journey. And after that time with Dallas Willard, I felt compelled in my life to be all about this and to help myself get healthy and then help others get healthy. Mm-hmm. And so since 1996, this has been our life. And now it's 2023 as we're recording this. Or no, 2024.
Yeah, just turned, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. And I'm still about it. And now I'm 69 and I'm still about it. And I just went on a retreat with 20 people down in Charleston. And the theme was our belovedness. And they too had never heard this. Mm. The implications of what it meant to live and to accept and to own and to wear your belovedness. Yeah. That's the beginning of getting healthy.
Yeah. Mm. I absolutely have always loved your emphasis on what it means to spend your whole life understanding that belovedness. And I listened to your story, the way that, you know, you said intoxicated with your ministry and, you know, good things, but
wonderful
the speed
things
of going towards these things, with thoughts, ideas, you know, being kind of in this theological headspace and just, you know, doing the right thing. But what it sounds like is when you burned out, when you went to go spend time with Dallas Willard, it's like that speed, you were able to slow down that pace and drop down kind of into understanding your heart and like what was missing. Like, oh, I didn't understand how loved I really am.
No, I didn't get it at all. I think a good metaphor to think through a little bit, I often think of it when I'm talking to Travis, is, you know, that many cars have five gears, and many men and women have no fifth gear, and they know reverse. They don't know neutral. They think neutral is sleeping, but we're in a time where people aren't sleeping well. And there's certainly no first gear or second gear. We've stripped the inner gears of our soul through busy, 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 busy. And it was Dallas Willard that says to us that the secret to the spiritual life is the ruthless eradication of hurry. So the whole idea, this is why when you tackle hurry and scurry in your life, you are doing the work of the soul to really come down. And, you know, we're living here in the Native American Cherokee lands. And when in the stupid wisdom of the United States government that they decided to move all these beautiful people, the Cherokee Indians, to the land of Oklahoma, which isn't really the Blue Ridge Mountains, the Cherokee chief told the army colonel who was up on his horse, please let us slow down. Our souls need to catch up with our body. Mm-hmm. And that's the cry of mothers of young children. That's the cry. I was just on this retreat with everybody was y'all's age and they all had young children and the exhaustion that they talked about, sleepless nights and do get up, go weekends, can't do Sabbath, poopy diapers and throwing up kids and angry bosses and get out there and do it again. Another day, another dollar, get up, you know? And it's just like this, the deal about this is that soul care is not an option. It's not an add-on. It's not like perfume that you put on or cologne for a man after you've already taken a shower. If this is not an extra, this is the fundamental first step to get out of our hole that we have dug and that we've fallen into, is learning how to value and honor our soul, which God is madly and passionately in love with.
Mm-hmm. Graham Greene, the writer, talks about there's a virtue in slowness that we've lost. And hearing all of this, you know, my question to you, with all of your insights and experience, you know, talking to pastors and people of all different vocations, and like you said, moms and everybody, is what do you feel? And it's maybe different for everybody in this case, but you know, there's kind of the sense for some of us that to slow down, to get out of fifth gear takes us places. We live in a society, and the church celebrates this. You've said that well, that the intoxication of results as a pastor is an addiction that actually gets cheers, unlike other addictions that, you know, okay, you need help. How can we actually support your addiction more, right? But there's kind of like, I kind of see it this way of where, so for some of us, we're just in a society of go, 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 do, accomplish, do more. We must prove our identities all of the time, or we feel that pressure. So that accounts for some of the speed for sure. And then there's some of us, and maybe it's the same people too, it's the slowing down and sitting still is risky. We have to sit with, or we think that we have to sit with our thoughts that scare us. Or what does it mean to actually be still, because my mind is this. So, I mean, unpack a little bit of like, what do you think also is behind us not wanting to slow down?
Well, I don't think we know how. Mm. I think our culture has shaped us to be earbudded people. Mm. Up here in the National Forest, every time I go out to walk, everybody's walking with earbuds. So in the midst of oak trees, squirrels, beautiful wildflowers, people aren't really paying attention. They're working on their aerobic exercise. They're, you know, trying to do this, but the mind is very busy. Yep. And so learning how to still and quiet the mind is the practice of soul care. And I can tell you this, that people can't really do this by themselves. Mm. They need to be coached. They need to be in a relationship with somebody that's been around the block and can hand them the hand, outstretch them and say, come this way, take two steps over and then come forward. So we've, in our rugged individualism in America, especially, we just feel like we don't really need each other. And so it's like, I'll do it myself or it won't be done. And then we're involved in many, many churches that are led by, sadly, unhealthy pastors that haven't done their inner work. And so they're serving up what they think is right, but it's kind of, there's healthier food to be served even in the church. Mm. And so our work has really been a lot with pastors and leaders and churches that have come to us when we lived in Colorado. And even now, a pastor is coming next week from Nashville. And I'll spend a few days in an Airbnb and we'll get together for a couple of hours every day. And Travis, talk like you and I do. Mm. Because he needs somebody to listen to him. He needs somebody to unpack his story to. It's like learning Chinese when you are learning the language of the soul. It's really that different. It's like, oh, I might know egg roll and I might know wonton, but I don't know much else in the Chinese than that. Can you give me a few more monosyllables? So our work has been really giving people the language and introducing them to what it means to care for the soul.
Yeah. I love that. So take us into, you mentioned your time with Dallas Willard and beginning to understand your belovedness. And then you began this ministry out in Colorado called Potter's Inn. Do you want to give us a snapshot of that time, what your vision was? Did it become what you thought it would be? You know, what do you want to say about that?
Yeah, it was whiteboarding. I didn't go there to rethink my vocational interest or my vocational. I went because I was hemorrhaging and I was bleeding out. Mm. And so in that monastery where I spent a month with him and had spiritual direction with him, I was bleeding out in front of him, and he knew that. And so basically the first 2 weeks was applying tourniquets and pressure on my jugular vein to stop the bleeding, because I was miserable. Gwen was miserable. Our marriage had been infected. I was on steroids. I was running on adrenaline the way many people are in our culture, trying to prove their identity, to prove that there's something, to be successful more. And that was coming out of unhealth, because I wasn't healthy. I thought, well, then if I'm successful in my vocation, then I'll be applauded. Then I'll be affirmed. Then somebody will say, oh, Steve, I love you. And I remember that feeling when I would preach my heart out and people would respond. And in the Baptist church, people would come forward and I was baptizing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. But it was like being a meth addict. I needed more. And until I went into recovery, and that's really what that was, going to Dallas Willard was like hitting a wall and going into recovery, a total lockdown monastery. And Dallas said to me, I want you to only, he asked me if I had a car there, and I didn't, and it was before Uber. And so I asked somebody who had a car, can you take me to a bookstore? Because Dallas said, I want you to go get a red letter edition of the Bible. And I said, why? And he said, because for you to recover, I want you to only read the red letters of Jesus for the next year. That will bring you back to life, Steve. So I went out to a bookstore, got a red letter edition of the Bible, which I still have right here. And I began reading the words of Jesus, and words that he said simply like this. This is in the Message translation, but he said these words to people like me, people like you guys, people that are listening to us. Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Those are the three triage questions of soul care. Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? And then Jesus said, get away with me and I'll help you recover your life. In 2024, with this election coming, with political discord, with that has busted open our families that we can't even talk about things because we're so angry and upset. There's a seething anger in the hearts of so many people that we've lost our civility and we've lost the dignity of how to treat people, because we've lost that if you're red or blue or from Iowa or Kansas or North Carolina or South Carolina, you're red state, blue state, you're still the beloved.
Right.
You happen to be the beloved before you were red or blue. And I think if we can reclaim that, we could find our brothers and our sisters that don't speak to us and don't come to the family reunions anymore or Sunday night hamburger cookouts. We've forgotten, and we're going to need to go back to some of this to reclaim what we've lost. So the time with Dallas was recovery. And then I came home and told Gwen, we need to redo everything. We need to redo everything. And I apologized. I asked for forgiveness. I introduced her. She began her own journey of reading people that were outside the spheres of the Baptist church world, of the evangelical, like a book by Henry Nouwen that unlocked a great mystery to us that somebody had given us to read, and other things like that. It's just like we had to read other people, ancient people, people that were dead, but whose words were still alive, that showed us a step-by-step way of following what the Bible calls ancient paths. And Jeremiah says, you know, ask for the ancient paths, and in them you'll find your life. And we needed to be able to do that.
So going back into, you know, really unpacking just soul care itself, and, you know, for especially there's a lot of listeners who just, this is such a new sounding thing. I mean, there's maybe a sense of like, I understand caring for my soul, but it just still sounds mystical, foreign. I have no idea still, it's still Chinese. So if you could start, Steve, by just giving us sort of your working definition, even of just basically what is the soul, and then take us into some practices and you know, ideas around the care of the soul and your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, just, I love the etymology of words. What do the actual words soul care mean? Well, soul is the whole person. Like, I'm looking at the two of you. When I look at you, Trav, I'm looking at your body, but in your body is your soul. Your body is the address of your soul. Jessica, that's your body, your good, beautiful face that's radiating all the morning light. Inside that body is the soul. And, you know, I was walking down at Walgreens, the cosmetic counter, the women's cosmetic. I wasn't looking for myself, but I was headed to the pharmacy. But all the products, beauty, eternal beauty, forever young, all this emphasis on our external look. And here we are as men trying to be the beefed out, buffed up guys on the Peloton bikes that the lady on the screen is screaming at, do it harder, do it faster, and be all buff. But inside of us is this beautiful, alive essence, essence of our soul. And that's what God is crazy about, like created in the image of God. I like to think of it this way, that body and soul, the psalmist says in one of his poems in Psalm 139, you know, we are wonderfully and fearfully made. We're a complexion of emotional parts of our lives, like how we're feeling, how we're doing, happy, sad, glad, mad, depressed, angry, exhilarated, joyful. Our emotional life and the richness of our emotional life is a big component of soul care. It's one component. Our physical life, how are we taking care of the address, the container of our soul? If we're not feeling well, we're not well. We don't make this dichotomy like, oh, I've got a cold or I'm recovering from COVID, but my heart is very happy. Right. No, it's if you're not feeling well, you're not doing well. And there's a connection that you teach your children, you know, the foot bone's connected to the ankle bone to the knee bone to the leg bone to the hip bone. What we've forgotten in American spirituality is that everything is connected. So our body, our emotions, our relationship. Many of us, especially now in 2024, 25, we're just very lonely people. Loneliness is the new epidemic. And so loneliness from not having friends, not having somebody for me. Who's the two people? I often ask men, who are the two people you would call if you woke up and your wife was dead in the bed next to you? And many men can't think of anybody. And, you know, I think women do better here, actually, than men on so many things and relationally. And so it's hard for us to confess that we're just not doing well relationally. Sometimes they're just broken relationships. I'm done with you. You're dead to me. We've cut off sections of our past and people in our present that give us a hard time. We think that's soul care. That's not really soul care. Is to protect ourselves and go live as a hermit or a monk. I just came back from a monastery called Mepkin Abbey, which is a Trappist monastery. We're not called to be monks. Those guys are, because that's a special way of life and study and their disciplines. But I'm a normal person. I'm a dad. I'm a grandfather. I'm just like you. And I need to learn how to take care of my emotions, my body, my relationships, and my vocation. This is a big one, is our vocational life. You know, we work as men and women. And if we're not happy with our work, if we're just sick and tired, like a guy I work with just hates his job. He told me he wears an Apple Watch that monitors his heartbeats. And when he gets to work, his heartbeat goes to 120 and stays at 120 until he checks out at 5 o'clock. And it's the truth. I've seen it. He showed me. And I was with him this past weekend, and his heart rate was 70 as we sat there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and the goodness of just relaxing and being together. So taking care of your soul is body, relationships, vocation. How are you doing with your work? What's making you come alive? Are you fulfilled? Are you empty? What do you really want to do with your life? What are your deep desires? Your emotional life. And finally, the spiritual life. You know, in Proverbs 4:23, we're told, guard your heart, for from the heart flows the rivers of life. And we're supposed to guard our life. In Deuteronomy 5, we're told to keep your soul. Keep your soul. So anyone that says soul care isn't in the Bible, you need to turn to Deuteronomy 5. You need to look at the very life of Jesus, who kept his soul and didn't live in a hurry and didn't rush in a hurry, didn't even start his 36-month mission trip, really, till he was 30 years old, till he heard he was the beloved in the baptism and again at the transfiguration. We've got it all wrong, and we've imported our American way of thinking and put it into the scriptures and stirred it all up and then exported all that into the church, into performance-driven worship, with people up on stage and light shows and smoke machines and manufacturing holiness. Yeah. We actually think we can do that. I mean, in our pride of doing all this. So soul care is thinking through those five aspects. And then the word care in Latin, the root is cure, to cure. Hmm. So the first pastors were called curates. Now we call them CEOs.
Yeah.
They're managers. They're not curates. And it's just like, oh, so, you know, soul care wakes us up that we have to rethink everything through that. And so what I've done in my life is one by one, one person at a time, learning from the life of Jesus. He didn't start a program. He didn't start a whole movement. He just took 12 men and a few women and began them to excavate into their hearts and find their hearts again and learn to live with their hearts. It was Irenaeus, an early church father, that said, the glory of God is a human being fully alive.
I love that so much.
And many of us are the living dead. We're not fully alive.
Right.
And so when it gets to this, how do you do this as a mom of preschoolers? And how do I do this with raging teenagers and hormonal driven guys in my house and dropping them off to running matches and soccer matches and girls basketball? That's where we have to talk this through, because it's not a luxury. There is a way to do it. Mm-hmm. And we can do this together. Mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. And the three of us have a togetherness in our relationship. We talk often. We see each other often. Travis, I'm talking to you once a month. Mm-hmm. Jesse, I'm always texting you and you're texting me and I'm listening to your podcast. And, you know, it's like we need each other. And, you know, yeah.
Well, you came into our lives at the very best time, because I'm listening to you describe the soul that's not well. And, you know, it after a period of time of intense stress and caring for others that Travis and I had just adopted and just moved and you know, were like wholeheartedly caring for his dad as he
yeah,
was sick.
It's so important to listen to this podcast after listening to the two podcasts about your brother, because mm-hmm. I just listened to those. And I thought, as I told you, that was a very sad and sobering story. But the effects of all that care, giving out, and with your adopted sons and your biological children and how you're living your life, I look at that as just like, you can't give. Mm-hmm. You must be given too.
Right.
And so the question of soul care is, I will give. The fundamental question is, but how will I be given to? Right. What will bring me to life? And how can I live in a sustaining way? Right. And so that's kind of where our relationship began, is just being a companion to right. each other and drawing our chairs along each other and yeah. sharing some meals together. And, you know.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That idea of giving, you have to give from something you already possess, right? Yeah. And so,
how can an empty teacup pour out anything into it when it's empty? It yeah. has to have something in it.
Yeah. yeah.
So
yeah.
the picture of soul care, it's like going to the gas station to fill up your car. There's the, you know, it has all those pumps there. Each of those pumps has four hoses, giving four cars mm-hmm. at a time. But where is the hose to replenish right. the tank?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's so common for moms especially to say, I have to do all these things before I take time, you know, take time for myself, or I go for a walk, or I just take a bath or whatever, like as if it's selfish. Yeah. Even time to nourish your spiritual life and to get alone with God gets put on the back burner because mm-hmm. you're giving constantly. Now, you know, men do that too, but that's a common thing, is people say, well, what about missions? What about you know, all these aspects of the Christian life? Like, if I just fill up all my time,
you need to just bear your cross.
I mean, yeah, that's what
very
we're
commonly told.
It's deny yourself, right. pick it up.
Anything but around the self is selfish. It makes people nervous.
Yeah, let me clear this up. Mm-hmm. Parker Palmer, who is a prolific writer and a Quaker, has said this sentence: self-care is never a selfish act. Mm. To care for yourself is never selfish. Why? Because if I, you know, Gwen's going to get on the plane tomorrow and fly home from Colorado, and the first thing that the flight attendant's going to say is, in the event of cabin depressurization, first put the oxygen mask on yourself, then help the person. See, this is what we don't know how to do as couples, as busy men, as busy women. We just clock in and clock out and go to bed exhausted. And then we medicate. Oh, and then we caffeinate. Oh, and then we are driving ourselves on fifth gear, and we're calling exhaustion the abundant life. Mm. And let me be very clear. The exhausted life is not the abundant life. And a peaceful life is not a luxury. It's not an add-on. Paul says, if it is all possible, be at peace and live quietly. Now, a church that we work with down in Orlando adopted the mantra for a year, get loud. And I walked in and saw get loud everywhere. It's just like, oh, that's cute. And that's very socially influencing. And where did you hear that little mantra? Did you pay a consultant to come up with that and have t-shirts get loud? Because I don't think Jesus would say get loud. I really don't. I mean, I think a loudness comes out of an unhealthiness. Mm. Look at our politicians.
Yeah.
And we need to find another whole way of living.
So we've talked about what soul care is. Steve, if you could now walk us through, what does it look like?
Hmm. I like to look at it like, you know, building a deck onto your house, or, you know, if you're doing a renovation. First of all, soul care is kind of renovation. Most of us who are hearing this are alive. We're in our 20s, 30s. I'm 60, in my late 60s. We're somewhere. So we've had some stuff put together. We've been building kind of our house, our bodies, our life, our career. But there has to probably be doing some renovation. I mean, when we moved in this house, you guys saw it. We renovated. Mm-hmm. We painted. And just thinking about a deck, there are these pilings that have to be driven into the ground to hold up the deck. So here's about six pilings that I want to offer that are just foundational and core to the essence of what we mean by soul care. The first one is establishing yourself as the beloved of God. This is about your identity. I think there's three core lies to every soul that is embedded in the soul. And they are, I am what I do, I am what I have, and I am what other people think of me. So there you go. I am what I do. What are you? I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a nurse. I'm a teacher. I'm a homeschool mom. Oh, I'm sorry. You're just a homeschool mom. I've got two daughters. And it's just like you lose your identity almost. So we live with this, and we're not what we do. We are the beloved of God. So thinking through your identity and your belovedness, a great book there, just to throw out a few resources along the way, The Gift of Being Yourself by David Benner. Maybe these can be in the show notes. And Life is the Beloved by Henry Nouwen. Those are the two most helpful books I've read on how to reconstruct your new understanding of yourself. And then seeing your spouse, seeing your children as the beloved, that's huge when you realize you too are the beloved. And I'm not just raising kids. I'm raising the very beloved of God. Second is understanding healthy rhythms. Most of us in our country are trying to balance our life. And I like to just say balance is bunk. It doesn't work. It will not work. Jesus never said live a balanced life. The life he lived was a life of rhythm. He engaged with people and then he disengaged. He did his work and then he quietly withdrew to lonely places, we're told. Luke 5:14. He withdrew to lonely places regularly. Engage, disengage. Here's our deal. Most of us from high school, college, trade school have learned how to engage. No one's ever taught us to disengage. So the work of soul care is, how can I relax and not feel guilty? How can I quiet my mind so that I can really have some peace and quiet without listening to podcasts? Listening to podcasts is good, and I believe in them, isn't peace and quiet. You're probably driving down some interstate right now, listening to this podcast. Hopefully you're not going to rear into somebody, but peace and quiet is taking everything off and being still. The psalmist said, be still and know that I am God. So there's a knowing that comes through stillness that busyness never offers us. So the rhythm is Sabbath. That's another healthy rhythm. Again, for everybody saying, oh, this sounds like a luxury. I can't do Sabbath. I've got 15 children who are all needing to be fed. Sabbath wasn't given to people who were already living this life. Sabbath was given people who were in the wilderness running from their lives from the Egyptians. And God said, no, even in the wilderness, I want you to have Sabbath because you need time off. Sabbath means to cease. Every 6 days we should cease. So every 6 days, Gwen and I, we don't talk about our work. We never talk about people. We don't talk about a staff person. It's a boundary that we will just talk about us, about life. Sabbath means doing something every day that brings you back to life. And in y'all's case, with all your children that you have, Sabbath has to be negotiated. Sometimes you just can't shut down, but it's like, Jess, you be mom with the kids from this morning, like 9 to 12. I'm going to have the morning off, and then I'll come back. We'll have lunch together, and then you go off and take the afternoon off. Sabbath is negotiated, and Sabbath is, it's not as hard and it's not as impossible as it seems to us. It's just that it's counterintuitive, sadly, in our culture. So I think the idea of Sabbath and living in healthy rhythms has helped me to learn to say no, to live in my limits. Most of us feel guilty, and so we say yes to everything. But when we learn to say no, we're learning to say yes to ourselves and yes to life. And so this is so important, no matter what stage. If you're retired people, I'm learning, or busier because they've got so many options to fill up their time with it. But how can that look? Another one is, I think if I could Travis and Jess, if we could interview all the spiritual writers, you know, Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross, all, you know, Francis, all these people, and line them up and say, where should we begin? What is the first and most important place to begin? With one voice, they would say, practice silence. I loved it at the monastery because there was a sign in our meeting room and it says, silence is spoken here. God's first language was silence. And we have forgotten that. And to be quiet, to listen to the still small voice. Silence is not reading Romans, doing a Bible study. I know this kind of smacks and slaps in the face, and it needs to because we think we got this down, but we really don't. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're substituting other kinds of busyness into our quiet times rather than giving ourselves permission just to breathe. You know, I think where we begin in practicing soul care, and Travis, you and I do this every time that we're starting our monthly conversation, but we just breathe together. Mm. You've had a busy morning. I've had a busy morning. And I said, okay, let's just do about three breaths together. Let's inhale, hold it, exhale, another deep one. Try to get 10 more percent in. In fact, why don't you do it now with me? Just breathe in and hold it. And then slowly through your mouth, just breathe it out. We do that like three times. Just a big inhale. And what that does is that just connects your heart with your tongue, actually. Your tongue will go down into your heart and help you bring up what needs to really be said, rather than all this flighty, hyper stuff that you'll start, oh, I'm doing this, and I've been 30 this, and I did that, and we just came back from this. That's not what the heart wants to talk about is busyness. The heart wants to talk about what's really happening. How are you doing with the life you are living? Mm. That's the beautiful question of the heart. So just doing some breathing. We did that on our retreat with these 20 people. It's just, we all sat in a room. This isn't woo-woo Chinese, you know, going to hell stuff. Jesus breathed, and when we breathe, the Hebrew word is ruach, the breath of God. So every time we practice breathing, we're slowing our heart rate down. Our endorphins are releasing, medicating our brain, our anxiousness, our heart rate's coming down, our blood pressure's lowering. We're getting in sync. And I love that. Being in sync is living with the soul and mind. And that's really the bottom line definition of soul care. Hmm. What is soul care? Learning to live with the soul and mind, not money in mind. Not my house payment in mind, not my square footage in mind, not, oh my gosh, the Democratic and Republican election and what's going to happen in mind, the soul in mind. Hmm. And there is the soul of our country, and I think in their souls of our churches that we need to reestablish, and the soul of marriage, that beautiful space between us that sometimes can get so thin and fragmented in our hurriedness and our busyness.
Yeah, absolutely. In many ways, that was 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, I guess, when we first went on retreat with you at Oak Island on the beach. That fragmentedness, that busyness is where we were at and just needing that rest. Mm. And something that we absolutely appreciated that you provided and we had not experienced before was using poetry and using kind of the cadence and the slower pace of simpler words to help us listen to the heart. So I was just curious if you might have a poem that comes to mind, something that you feel like embodies this idea of soul care, and share it with us.
Yeah, thank you. I am into poetry because I think I've noticed at my church, it's really wordy. It's a lot of words. Mm-hmm. They read a lot of scripture, Old Testament, New Testament, gospel. Then there's a sermon, and then we do prayers of the people and all of that. We go to a liturgical church. Less is more for me these days. And poetry is a way to say more in fewer words. Mm. So I've been writing some poems, and I wrote one this week, which, thank you, I would love to read. And it's really on that first plank of the new deck of our life, of our identity, and it's simply the belovedness. So let me read this for you, and you can put this in the show notes, and people can have this. I'd love for you to have it. It's titled Belovedness. I have not always loved my essence. It's taken me years to accept my dust as beautiful, to agree to be the person I am is a long, arduous, and present journey. Agree with my limitations and my glory. Accept my ruin and my delight. Acknowledge the shame and know my story. Admit my woe and my wonder. Finding my own beauty when feeling so not. Seeing the grandeur of the mountains and know I am more. That I matter was news to me on one good day. That I belong is the news I most long to hear. I am and I become the beloved, all quadrants of my heart undivided. To listen to this love, to become this love. What I like about this poem is it's really simple. It's very elementary, and yet it's very mysterious. But these movements of agreeing to be the person that I am, that's kind of like what the journey is, because most of us, we were told we were not good, and our parents withheld love or called us names. I mean, it's just unbelievable what all the thousands of stories of how people were verbally and emotionally abused in their childhood, often by parents who themselves didn't know they were the beloved and didn't have the language. So we can stop this generational curse. You wondered what that is? We're talking about it right here. Accepting my ruin and my delight. Most of us know we're sinners, but we don't know our delight.
Yeah.
We don't know our glory. Before we were sinners, by the way, we were born in the goodness of God. Before Genesis 3 came Genesis 1 and our original goodness. So admit my woe and my wonder. So it's a beautiful poem, and you too represent this poem to me, because I've watched you grow in your own belovedness and the light. Travis, you and I talk about this every month because of your story and your good heart, and we call it your good gut. Right. And for me to affirm your belovedness as an older man, as a male, into your heart that seems so thirsty and so eager, that's the spiritual life. Yeah. And you and I get to have beautiful conversations, which I think is going to be another episode we're going to talk about what is a beautiful spiritual conversation look like and how does it sound.
Yeah.
So thank you for having me today. It's been my joy.
It has been just a gift and an honor to sit here with you and just to hear you talk about both your story, but the journey into soul care, and describe it in such a way that's so practical and so I don't know, just it kind of inspired my heart to even hear it again and hear some of the words I've heard you say before.
Yeah, I second that. I mean, I'm just in awe of the the rich like depth and care and intentionality that you bring with your words, with your experiences, with your even your pain. You know, you've walked a full life and you've seen the impact of soul care and how it has brought people back back to life. And I so appreciate the ministry of that, that you continue to do in your work with Potter's Inn and Spiritual Direction.
And the joy for me is to now pass the mantle to you two and to other people. You know, there's a lot of years, there's a lot of decades between us. And yet I watch you, I listen to you, I read you, your poems, your writing on Substack, and Travis, your book and your heart that you're doing in the Enneagram and your coaching work. It's just like, this is all integral. And you're finding a voice for your audience and a platform for people that need this message. So I applaud you and I affirm you and I am for you, and may your tribe increase.
That is a wonderful blessing. Thank you for that.
Thank you for saying that. And so, yeah, in part two of this to follow, we're going to unpack more about actual sort of a sub topic within soul care, but it's the discussion around spiritual direction. So that's going to be part two of this episode. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to the podcast today. I hope you found something helpful, hopeful, or thought-provoking. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to any resources mentioned in the podcast. And we also have links in the notes for our own resources to check out. We would really love to hear from you. And we're also really grateful for your support by sharing the podcast episodes with your friends and family and leaving a rating and review. May we all regain and maintain our wonder, hope, and inspiration as we look at our ordinary through new and fresh eyes.